Ladies and gentlemen, this is the third lecture by Professor Dan Bahat, and it's a beautiful day. This is the sixth day of the Jewish Culture Festival in Krakow. We are left with 3 days, and it's a sad day because it's day six and also the last day when Professor Dan Bahat is speaking before you. We have just talked, and we also talked about the future. The future belongs to him and us, and I think we will meet again in a year in equal numbers.
Of course, we are so happy. This is the sixth day of a Jewish Culture Festival, and this is why this day is so beautiful and lovely. But this is also a very sad day, because this is the last day when you can meet and you can listen to Professor Dan Bahat. But thank God we just talked each other, and we decided that we'll meet next year, of course, over here during the festival. So if you have a different plans regarding to your vacation or the time of the festival, it's strictly God forbidden. You have to be here. You must be here. So I have no words to thank Dan Bahat and his wife, Anat. Thank you very much, Anat, that you brought us him. You brought him over here because he's spending all time in Italy, in Israel, but finally he decided to come to Krakow. So I have no words down to thank you from the bottom of my heart that you accepted the invitation and that you are, you know, sharing this unbelievably, I haven't even no words, your knowledge and your passion and your vision and your spirituality and just that you're sharing with the people your personality. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, panie, panowie, po raz trzeci, pan profesor Dan Bahat.
Po tych słów ja zostałem całkiem.
After all these words, I'm speechless. I have no idea what I might say responding to it. Before I start speaking English, I want to explain one thing to you in Polish. This is a photograph that you can see. This is the north, this is the south. And here you can see David's city. This is where Jerusalem starts, and this is Mount Sinai. This is a mount. And there are many cemeteries here. This is the Franciscan Cemetery. Why is it so important to show it in Poland? Because this is the place where Schindler's grave is. His funeral was in Jerusalem. And this is why we wanted to, I wanted to show you where it is. I wanted to show you this photograph. Once again, I need to apologize that I'm going to speak English to you. Unfortunately, Polish is too difficult for me. So I'll deliver my lecture in English, and I'm going to show you a number of photographs that you have already seen yesterday and the day before yesterday. I know I want to show you, well, the same pictures, but still, what can I do? It's the temple we are talking about.
English. Okay, good. And we start with the first picture, which we can see Jerusalem, the old city. You remember the walls of the Roman city, whereas the city of Herod was included also the city of David, as well as Mount Zion, and also certain part in the north, which is not so clear to us yet. The topic of today's lecture, we called it the Western Wall Tunnel. What is that? Here you can see the Temple Mount. Again, you already know the pictures, Southern Wall, Eastern Wall, Northern Wall, and Western Wall. The Jewish Prayer Plaza is here, and this one occupies 1/9 of the entire length of the Western Wall. Today, the Western Wall of the Temple Mount is as follows. First 60 meters, Here is the archaeological excavations, which went down about over 10 meters in Ossi, what we can see today, Herodian Street and other remains. Then we've got here a block, which is done by the fact that there is a gate in the Temple Mount through which many, all the tourists, whoever goes to the Temple Mount, tourists, the Muslims, to prayer, are all going from here, going onto the Temple Mount. Then you have got 57 meters, which are the praying part of the Western Wall. And from here, all the way to the north, 350 meters, is occupied by Muslim buildings, which were built in the mostly 14th, 15th century. I must say, and this we'll speak about it also later, that also all of the Western Wall was covered by those buildings. But an earthquake which occurred in 1546 destroyed completely all those buildings, the proof to it I will show you later, and then slowly the Jews started to come to this place where the wall of the Herodian Temple Mount was visible, and they started to come for prayer, first of all individual prayer. And now a very important date is 1655, which means 17th century, when the first time we hear about a general Jewish prayer as we see today. Very important to say, because all my story will be about what happens, what is the Jewish history of the Temple Mount after the destruction of the Temple, which is extremely important to say. So I repeat, all this area was also covered with Muslim buildings, as you see here, and only this part, due to an earthquake in 1546, the place was exposed and people started to come and pray, at first as individual prayer, and then 1655, the prayer which we see today. So altogether, it is very interesting, because the first question which you may ask me is, what did the Jews do before? And this is a part of my lecture of today, will be to explain what happens. I'll make a short, very short repetition of the history of the Temple Mount from Jewish perspective after the destruction of the Temple in 70 AD. You must remember that 60 years after the destruction of 70, another revolt of the Jews occurred, the end of which it was not allowed to Jews to live in Jerusalem. Christian point of view in this case is also very important, and I'll explain why. The decree of Hadrian, Emperor Hadrian, to forbid the Jews to come, he did not say it is forbidden the Jews to come, but he says it was forbidden to the circumcised to come to Jerusalem. Why is it so important from Christian point of view? Because at that time already, about 135 AD, there were already many Christians who were not of Jewish origins, and they did not have the habit of circumcision. So they could live in Jerusalem, and those Christians were the ones to go and pray to the Christian holy places. And I say that this is the only way by which I can explain how Constantine knew where to build the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Because the story of his mother Helena, who presumably discovered the holy relics, is a story which is heard for the first time only 50 years after the construction of the church by the Spanish pilgrim Egeria, who is so famous. So this is just a side thing. Jews are not living in Jerusalem. The prohibition on Jews to come and live in Jerusalem continued naturally after the Eastern Roman Empire accepted Christianity. And again, for the Christians, it was good. that Jews will not live in Jerusalem. So there are no Jews living in Jerusalem. Another thing, on the Temple Mount itself, I've mentioned it yesterday, nothing was built. The idea that a pagan temple was built on the Temple Mount, this idea is today frustrated by the Church Fathers, whom we know today better, and they tell us that actually the pagan temple was on the site where later the Church of the Holy Sepulchre was built. So actually the place is empty till the arrival of the Muslim in 638. In 638, the Muslims come. They are accompanied by Jews who show them where the temple was. They clean the place, but they built the first mosque in the south. Why? They wanted, the Jews insisted, that the temple or the mosque which they built will be in the north. So when they already Muslim praying towards Mecca, they will be able to pray towards the site where the temple was. So the Muslims understood the Jewish idea and decided to build the first mosque in the south. So here the Jews had to decide, are you praying towards the temple towards the north, or are you praying south to Mecca? Here is the point where the Jews who converted to Islam had to make sure that they are either that they are Muslim or they regret and they are Jewish again. When the Muslims conquered Jerusalem, Jews came with them. The Christian protested and say, no, no Jews in Jerusalem. And they started to fight to live in Jerusalem, not to live. So Omar, the conqueror of Jerusalem, told them, look, I'm not going into this discussion. Make up your mind, decide what do you want to do. Omar promised the Jews to have 200 Jewish families. But through the discussion with the Christian, with the patriarch, they finally concluded that they will do. 70 Jewish families from Tiberias will come and settle in Jerusalem. Where did the Jews ask to live? Very interesting. Not far from the temple to pray. Not far from the pool of Siloam, where they can make the ablution or the Jewish mikveh, Jewish ablution for purity, and near the market of the Jews. What is the market of the Jews? The meat market. And we know that here in this area, where later the Western Wall Praying Plaza was made, there was a slaughterhouse, an abattoir of Jerusalem in the early period. So the Jews settled here, in this area here, and indeed, in the excavations, was discovered a house, and on the lintel of the house were found drawings of three candelabra, which is the Jewish symbol to this very day. I want to remind you, when I speak about that, that the Jewish Zionist, Israeli flag, Star of David, first time officially becomes a Jewish symbol only in 1897 in the first Jewish Congress. It became diffused all over the world as the Jewish symbol number one, mostly because of the Nazis. Before it was, the candelabrum was still had an upper hand in as a Jewish symbol. So the discovery of the three candelabra is actually a very important fact to us, where the Jews lived. And this is the situation by the Muslims. Later I'll go and tell you some other facts which were discovered in the Western Wall Tunnel, but what I'd like to say is as follows. After I've said that the Western Wall Praying Plaza was discovered, as we see today, only in the 17th century, you can ask me, so what was there before? Why, when Jews came to Jerusalem, what did they do? The earliest documents which we have about the habits of Jewish prayer come from a very important Jewish archive, which is found today in Cambridge in England. We call it the Cachement of Documents from Cairo Synagogue. And there we know exactly the story. When the Jew came to Jerusalem, the first place where he went was to the top of Mount of Olives, somewhere here outside of the picture, from which he could see Jerusalem and had all kind of prayers saying at that site. The second thing which he did was to go down to the valley and up here and stand next to the southern gates of the temple. One of them was called the gate of the Kohen, or the gate of the priest, and there again another prayer was said. The continuation of a visit of a Jew to Jerusalem, after that, he went anti-clockwise from here, all around the gates of the temple, all the way around, like this, and came back to this gate. This gate in the south was the most important gate in the Jewish eyes till the 17th century, when the Western Wall Prayer Plaza replaced it. So this is actually the whole story. Now I go to my own story, the story of the Western Wall Tunnel. Here you can see a better view of the temple. You have seen this picture before. You can see the prayer plaza and the southern wall. In the southern wall, the most important gate is here. It is partially hidden by a Muslim building which was built in the 11th century. And from here, people used to go around all the gates without the possibility to enter the temple, because the Muslims saw the Jewish people drinking wine for Passover. They considered it as sacrilege, and they did not let them go to the Temple Mount. I want to remind you that the Muslims generally did not allow non-Muslim go to the Temple Mount, and this prohibition existed till World War I. Jews and Christians were not allowed to the Temple Mount. There is only one case in 1862 where the Prince of Wales, later to be Edward VII, had a special permission to go up to the Temple Mount, and then it was followed by the visits of Sir Charles Warren, about whom I'll speak in a minute. The thing which I want to show you here, when we see the Western Wall, those of you who have been to Jerusalem may recall that here is an entrance which goes underneath the whole thing. The first thing which we discovered when we started to dig a tunnel which goes all the way to the top, those who have been to Jerusalem know that here is the Via Dolorosa. When we started to dig here, we followed Charles Warren, but then we got the understanding why those buildings are all here. It is very, very important fact which we discovered in the Western Wall, and that is the following one. There were, as you know, 7 or 8 crusades. Some of them are more famous, some of them are less famous. The most famous of all is the first crusade, when they first came to Jerusalem. The third crusade with Richard Lionheart, Philippe Auguste, and Friedrich Barbarossa, also very famous. And there were some other, but definitely the sixth crusade is the most meaningful of all. It was, to our story, it was a crusade which was headed by Frederick II. Frederick II, who is very well known in Italy today. He is buried in Sicily, in Palermo, in the cathedral, because he was the king of Sicily, but the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. And when he came to Jerusalem, he managed to reach an agreement between the Muslims and himself, according to which no bloodshed, we will get the city entirely, but the Temple Mount will remain in Muslim hands. It was possible because the difference of levels between the Temple Mount and the city, which is much lower. So it was really a kind of a possibility to say up is Muslim, down is Christian. But the point is that when Jerusalem was reconquered in 1244, was reconquered by the Muslims, they decided immediately to unify the level of the city with the level of the Temple Mount. So they built enormous arches and monuments all the way on which they built their houses to unite. Before that event, there were only two gates leading to the Temple Mount. Today there are eight gates through which you can go, and actually no one will even think that the city and the Temple Mount are not one unit, because it is exactly, it is all actually one unit altogether. Thanks to the fact that they built us arches and vaults and all kind of means, enabled us to penetrate inside without causing damages to the buildings which are above, because our tunnel, which we made all along the western wall, 350 meters long, goes under those arches and structures, and the people who live above did not even know that somebody is walking under their houses. It is very interesting. The possibility to do it is also a legal possibility. When the British conquered Palestine in 1917, they were the first one, after the Ottoman Turks, to make a division of the country into blocks and parcels, as every modern normal country. When they came to the old city of Jerusalem, they simply could not do it, because what they said will make the whole of the old city one block, because in the case of Jerusalem, the old city, a wall can belong, one side of the wall can belong to one person, the other side of the wall to the other. Moreover, when you buy a house today, you always say, this house of mine is down to the depth of the earth and then to the height of sky. That's how it is. But in case of Jerusalem, if you don't say that the earth below the house belongs to you as well, and you don't show that you've got documents, that you've got a property for that, it doesn't belong to you. And therefore, whenever we walked, we were sure, first of all, that the people who live above don't have any claims to property of the things which are under the house. You understand? That's how it worked there, and so we could do the work of digging the tunnel. Again, 350 meters long. It starts actually in the Praying Plaza and ends in the Via Dolorosa, as many people who have been there have seen it. I go back to another thing which you have already told you, only to show you a section of the Dome of the Rock with the Holy Rock, which is here, under which is a cave. You can see the Holy Rock here. Why do I show you? Because as we say, and as we know, as it was believed by the Jews all through history, this is the site of the Holy of Holies. And all the calculations of the Jews where to pray and how to pray is always based on the fact that the Holy Rock is the site of the Holy of Holies of the Temple. You can see it here, another beautiful picture, which I brought. Actually, first of all, it is a beautiful picture. You can see it is a 19th century picture. And I brought it because of simple reason. When I say that Jews and Christians were not allowed to go to the Temple Mount in the 19th century, you see this picture. East of the Dome of the Rock is another little dome, which is called the Dome of the Chain. Why is that? Because when the Muslims conquered Jerusalem and they built the Dome of the Rock on the site of the temple, it disturbed them that it is not in the center of the Temple Mount. So exactly at the point where the two cornices of the Temple Mount meet, they built this one to indicate this is the center of the Temple Mount. So it is east of the Dome of the Rock. Why do I bring you this picture? It is very interesting. Since Christians were not allowed to build to visit the Temple Mount, how did they make this drawing? Very interesting. Very simple way. They stood on top of Mount of Olives, and the painters with binoculars, they looked to the place, and that's how they made the drawing. And that's why the Dome of the Chain, which is east of the Temple Mount, disturbs the view of the Dome of the Rock. So you see, so strict was the prohibition on non-Muslims to go to the Temple Mount. Nevertheless, you can see here the oldest drawing of the Dome of the Rock, done from top of Mount of Olives. Now, again, another thing which I want to show, the Jews know very well that the Dome of the Rock is the site of the Holy of Holies, and therefore, when the Muslims, by works which were done by Christian the artists in the early Muslim period, when they made this mosaic, which indicates royal crown, you remember, I've showed it to you in the before, this is indication also for the Jews who knew the Dome of the Rock, because before they were expelled from the Temple Mount, they had about 26 years where they could come and visit and clean the Dome of the Rock. They knew about it, and the memory of the temple existed there. Very, very important. Going back to the story, here we have got a picture of the Dome of the Rock. We can see here the Dome of the Rock. The gate to which Jews prayed was here. You remember encircling the whole thing. You can see here the prayer plaza. And from here, we start our trip, which goes all along underground, all the way into the place. This is Charles Warren. Charles Warren was a British engineer of great fame. He was a young man when he came to Jerusalem. He was sent after the British engineer, the military engineers of the British army. They were asked by the Ottoman Sultan to come and explore Jerusalem, to try to find all the water sources of Jerusalem, because Jerusalem, which used to drink water from cisterns, suffered cholera every few years. So they thought that the only ones who can do any work will be the British. So they sent Sir Charles Warren, who was a young engineer, military engineer, who became very famous when he excavated tunnels in the mountain of Gibraltar, in the great rock of Gibraltar, and he invented a system by which he can dig tunnels even in an area which is ruined, even in an area which is not stable, and so he was sent to Jerusalem. Charles Warren was a very, very famous man in England. After his works in Jerusalem, he got world fame. He was the head later of the London police. He had a very, very long story. He was the head of the Boy Scouts in the world and all kind of function, but his works in Jerusalem was nevertheless the highlight of his life in the country. Because of the works which is done on the Temple Mount and outside, we know, as you remember, I showed you Mount Moriah, again the Dome of the Rock, and look at a very important thing. Due west from the Dome of the Rock is this thing here, which actually should have been painted blue, as all the cisterns on the Temple Mount. It is called cistern number 30, but actually we know that this cistern is a gate to the Temple Mount. Only the Crusaders turned into a cistern. And the story is as follows. As I told you, at first, Jews were allowed by the Muslims to walk on the Temple Mount, especially as the Jews asked the Muslim authorities to give them the permission to be the cleaners of the Temple Mount, the ones who fill oil in the lamps of the Temple Mount, and so they were residing also on the Temple Mount. But this occurred in 638 when the Muslims conquered Jerusalem. In 716, the Muslims discovered that the Jews are drinking wine in the eve of Passover. They saw it as sacrilege and they threw them out of the Temple Mount. But they gave the Jews permission to pray at one of the gates of the Temple Mount. What do you think? What gate did they choose? They chose this gate because it is the closest point to the Holy of Holies. And this is where, even today, many Jewish women are coming to pray, because this is considered to be more holy than to pray where the Western Wall praying plaza is. By the way, in this picture you can see something very interesting. You can see here the little lane where Jews used to come before the 67 wall. You see, all that very narrow lane. People used to come here by the street to turn here, and this is all what was there. In 67, when we realized that hundreds and thousands of people will come, we knew that we cannot leave it like that, so we destroyed here a whole neighborhood, which was the poorest neighborhood in Jerusalem, and the people who lived there, which were very poor, received good housing north of the old city, and so actually the creation of the present plaza was possible. At any rate, Jews, as you see, how did we know about this gate? Not only because of Warren working, all the cisterns which you see here, we know thanks to the works which Warren did on the Temple Mount till they threw him out of the Temple Mount, because they did not want to see a Christian on the Temple Mount. At any rate, he came to this building here, which is one of the buildings built by the Mamluks in order to lift the city. He penetrated from here. You see, here was a street, here was a little garden, and he penetrated inside and started to walk further north. The Ottoman Turks were afraid that he is spying and discovering treasures from the temple, so they blocked his way. And then what happens, in order to find a way out, he started to walk and discovered here a whole system of bridge, which was built by the Maccabees, later by Herod the Great, rebuilt, and later rebuilt also by the Muslims, in order to bring water from pools which are beyond Bethlehem, bringing water all the way to the Temple Mount, and it goes down here. You see, here is a site where Muslims still use to this very day with the ancient aqueducts to bring, to clean themselves, to wash themselves before prayer. If some of you have been here yesterday, may recall, I showed it yesterday because I showed the two cisterns, this one and this one, which are the gates to the pre-Herodian Temple Mount, which we discussed actually yesterday. At any rate, this is how we see. You can see here a very important fact which immediately play our role. You see here the Temple Mount, you see Mount Moriah. I've shown this slide before, I told you there will be repetitions. You can see here the Mount of Bethesda, the Mountain of Antonia, and the City of David south below. Now, what happens next? Let us look here at the Western Wall. The Hill of Antonia is coming all the way down, as you can see. The level on which we live today is about this level. So look what happens. If we go along the Western Wall, you see the Western Wall of Herod, but look what happened here. Suddenly we don't have wall. We continue with the tunnel, but this is already rock. You see, and this we'll see. Very interesting and very important, because this is the first time that we could learn what is happening north of the Temple Mount, and I'll tell you more than that. According to Josephus Flavius, the contemporary Jewish historian, in his book, The Antiquities of the Jews, he says that Herod started to build the Temple Mount in his 18th year on the throne. In his book, The Jewish War, he started to tell us that he built it on his 15th year. No problem whatsoever, although one place says 18 and one says 15. Why? Because the Roman nominated Herod as king of Judah in the year 40 BC. But he then still, the Maccabeans ruled in Jerusalem, and he had to fight for 3 years till 37 BC in order to gain the rule after the victory over the Maccabeans. And therefore, when Herod says 18 or 15, it depends what does he refer to. Does he refer to the period when he was nominated, or is it when he was actually de facto becoming the king? In other words, in 22 BC, Herod started to build the temple in Jerusalem. Although Josephus Flavius tells us that it took 9 years to do, we know a very interesting thing. You remember the scene when Jesus is coming to Jerusalem and he says something to the Jews, And the Jews are very angry at him and tell him, how can you say you can build it and destroy it in 3 days? We are already walking on the Temple Mount for 46 years. In other words, we can imagine that this occurred in the year 26 AD. So altogether we see that Josephus Flavius did not witness the end of the story of the temple. Why do I tell you that? Because when I explained that the Western Wall and the mountain here are on the way of making work, today I know, thanks to the work which we have done on the Western Wall, that Herod never finished to cut the hill and to finish to build the Western Wall. In other words, the Temple Mount in Jerusalem was never finished. And this is the situation as we have today. For us, it is very important to understand, because all the ones who had doubt in the New Testament, which speaks about the year 26 as if the work is still continuing, now we know that it is the case. Indeed, in 26 AD, the works were still in course, and as I said, never finished. This is the idea which is so important. I bring here the picture of the Temple of Solomon. Why do I remember the Temple of Solomon? Because here you can see the temple itself. It is a very rough picture, but important to see. This is the temple. Here we have got the palaces of Solomon. But the important thing is that you see that the city walls, which protect the temple, are going along the topography. What did Herod the Great do? When he came, the temple was on top of Mount Moriah. What did he do? He built a larger temple, much, much, much larger, which you see like this, which means he annexed this valley in, he annexed this hill, parts of it he cut, and parts he did not cut, and they were left, as I say, till today, unfinished. So you see that Herod actually changed completely the natural topography of the Temple Mount. He filled this valley in, he filled this valley here as well, completely, completely different as what we thought before. This is again a picture you've seen, which can show you the same thing. Here is the temple as it was desired, and you can ask me again. You remember that when I spoke yesterday, I spoke about the third temple, the Hellenistic temple. And one of the things which are so important, that in the Western Wall tunnels, we were able to do something very simple, to delineate the northern line of this thing. Because on purpose, I did not mention it yesterday, because when I spoke yesterday about the pre-Herodian Temple Mount, I mentioned only the southern part, which is clear to us. If you remember the very long steps which are limiting the Temple Mount in the south, I've mentioned the two entries, which are actually today two cisterns, which I showed you 2 minutes ago. And altogether, I spoke about the south. I did not speak about the north. So look what is happening here. This is very important. What you can see here, again, this picture I showed you yesterday, this Herod's Temple Mount is this one. You can see it here. Yesterday I spoke about the two cisterns which are the southern gates, and I spoke, these are the steps which I've shown to you, and I've shown to you in the wall a kind of a break of two types of masonry. I did not speak about the north. The north is very important because we, for the first time, when we made a tunnel under the buildings and went all the way to the north, what did we discover? What Warren found before us, a kind of a fosse, a moat, which separates the area in the north to the area of the south. And here is another very interesting story. When you see here, there is a structure which I call the baris. We call the baris. Now, what is that? Already in the book of Nehemiah, there is a story that Jerusalem or the Temple Mount were protected by something which is called Birah. Bira in Hebrew is a capital city. This is a modern name. But in antiquity, Bira was a citadel. We say, for example, that Jerusalem is the Bira of Israel, that Warsaw is the Bira of Poland. Bira, it is called the strong city, which is actually, in modern terms, is capital city. So we know from the days of Nehemiah that north of the Temple Mount there was a Bira. Later, when Josephus Flavius speaks about Jerusalem and he describes it, he tells us that north of the temple was a baris. The Greek word for baris is something like citadel, although not in all the dictionaries they translate it that way. Some say that it is a type of a boat. They find all kind of, every dictionary I open of Greek has got another thing, but definitely it refers to a citadel. The baris was a very important factor. And one thing is important. If I manage to find the baris, then I'll be able to say the baris was outside of the Temple Mount. If I say that the baris is here, then I can say that the northern end is here of the Temple Mount. You see, so the importance of the works in the Western Wall tunnels are not only that we discover various periods, but it helps us to reconstruct, actually, to reconstruct the story of the baris, and then to understand where are the northern limits of the place. This is a very important section in the Western Wall tunnels, but I have to explain. You see, this is the Western Wall. This is the Western Wall. We walked here. On the way, there is a disturbance by a Muslim arch. But look what happens. When we walk today in the Western Wall tunnel, at a certain point, the natural bedrock, now you understand it already, the natural bedrock is going up and up and up and up and up all the way, never to be cut at the end. The part which I show you now, you see Herod cut the mountain, and so you could walk here all along when you see the cut rock everywhere. You see, you understand what I'm explaining, that on your right hand side, when you walk to the north, you can see the rock of the hill of Antonia. The hill of Antonia cut in order to enable the construction of the street which runs along the Western Wall. All along the Western Wall, from the south to the north, there is a street. Moreover, very important thing is, you see, on the Temple Mount, I did it in this drawing, which is reconstruction, I did something which is wrong. Why did I did it wrong? You see that here you can see a slope coming down. This slope, it does not exist in reality. Why? Because when Herod decided to create the platform, all the platform is horizontal, and so what you see here, all this area is horizontal. This doesn't exist at all. It is all horizontal. Why did I put it here? Very interesting. Look what is happening here. When the hill is going up, can you see it's going? Suddenly it is interrupted. Suddenly it is interrupted. When you go further up, it is interrupted again. And further we go here. Here we come to a place where there is an ancient cistern below this. All is cut by Herod the Great. The only way by which we can explain the fact that the rock is reduced here, that these are the foundation trenches for walls which were there. In other words, it must tell us about the existence of a structure which existed there before Herod the Great. And now look at that. The thickness of this is 4.5 meters. 4.5 meters must be a very, very, very strong building. Moreover, next to it is another one which is only put 2.50. If I am right, such a strong wall can have only one explanation, that this is the southern wall, because this is the most southern place where I can prove. This is the southern wall of the Baris. That's the only way I can explain. Whereas this one can be a kind of a wall inside. But the fact that it is cut all the way to here must explain, and here we don't know what is going on here, it was never excavated. We believe that it continued even further and went west of the Temple Mount Western Wall. You understand what I say? It is quite complicated. Imagine that here was a big structure which goes like this, which will include a cistern, for example, and then Herod the Great comes and cuts all the thing when he cuts the Western Wall. Here, where there was a cistern, he had to block it here, he had to block it here, and cut, of course, the mountain on this side in order to create horizontal Temple Mount platform, and so that's what we have here. When Herod, this is for us a new discovery, and when Herod the Great continued and made a paved street, here he created a plaza where two columns are still standing there. It is a very, very exciting thing to see because it gives us probably the first hint that north of what we believe is a pre-Herodian Temple Mount, the one which I called today, yesterday, the Hellenistic Temple Mount, the Temple Mount of 500 cubits on 500 cubits, those of you who have been yesterday may recall, all that is south of this area, and between these structures and the Temple Mount, which is further to the south, there was a deep foundation of, I would say, a deep ditch, a deep moat, a deep fosse, which actually separated the fortress from the Temple Mount. This is actually, as I see it, as it is in Herod's time. In Herod's time, if you remember, the Temple Mount, you see, and inside the Temple Mount, what did they mark? The 500 cubits of 500 cubits, clear. Now, if I take this picture as example, here we have this fosse, this canal, which combines a deep valley which runs here, another deep valley which runs here, and altogether these are the northern limits of the 500 cubits on 500 cubits. What I've just shown you, the remains of the two walls and the cistern, which I believe is of the previous structure, they are all here. How could I locate them? Because when we excavated the Western Wall Tunnel, when we came to this point, suddenly natural bedrock is coming out, and it is cut, as I said, by the two walls which I've mentioned, with the cistern and everything, and then we have got to think what we can see there. Now, this is very interesting. This is a model which was done in the 19th century by a German-Swiss scholar who was very much important for all the people who studied Jerusalem because he gave us so many examples and ideas about what was found in the 19th century. And this man did a fantastic model of the Temple Mount. Beautiful model. It is found today in Christ Church at Jaffa Gate in Jerusalem. Why did I bring it here? Because of simple reason. You see, this is the Temple Mount. He marks all the cisterns. This is the northern wall of the Temple Mount, and as you can see in this picture, that's why I brought it here, you can see the natural slope of the mountain which is to the north of the Temple Mount, and you can see that in spite of the fact that it shows it, it also shows us that the area here is flat. All this is flat, and but you can still underground, because this is the level, underground you can still see not only that, but also the fosse, and you can see also the dry riverbed which comes down toward the east. This is, by the way, the Golden Gate, and we have got here a beautiful, beautiful picture of how the northern end of the pre-Herodian Temple Mount, and it is, you see, Schick, this archaeologist of the 19th century, he was able to find, we found even more. What our contribution is, that here in this area, north of the canal of this fosse and the valley, here we found the remains of the walls which are there and indicate the existence of the bars. You see, I put it now for from the other side, from the east this case, and you can see how deep the valley here goes down. There we have got the canal, the foss. This is the northern end of the Temple Mount. And if you go to this corner today even, you can see natural bedrock is coming out all the way here and coming down slowly here. This part was cut. In other words, if I am right, and it's not a matter of am I right, the fact is that outside there, the western wall is cut for the street, which I've just mentioned. Inside it is cut to make this platform of the Temple Mount. So what is the western wall? All at the northern end is actually built on rock, cut on both sides, inside the Temple Mount and outside of the Temple Mount, and the upper part of the wall is masonry. So down is rock and up is masonry. Very unusual, and we can say that only Herod the Great could have done such a great work. This is a sketch which I did. It is my handwriting. I did it just like that to make things clear. What do we see here? Now I ask a draftsman to make it nicer, but it is important as it is. Look, what can we see here? Oh, sorry. What can we see here? This is the northern end of the Temple Mount. You see? From here, the Temple Mount is square. Another thing which I did here was a topography, as you see, the topography of the Antonia Hill. Why do I mention the Antonia? Why is it so important? Every Christian pilgrim who comes to Jerusalem is always told that the Antonia Fortress, which is named after Mark Antony, Antonia Fortress is the place where Pontius Pilate trialed Jesus, and from this forms the first station of the Via Dolorosa. You see, I don't go in now, of course, I will keep it for next time, to speak about the reality, the authenticity of the holy places. We leave it for another time. But this is a Christian belief. Now look at that. As I said, here is, as you see, here is the topography of the hill. Now, because I have found those two channels which indicate walls, one of them here and one of them here, I believe that the baris, the baris was an enormous hill. It comes out from the western wall. Why? Because had it been inside, we couldn't have seen on the western wall. You couldn't see how it is cutting through the western wall in order to go out. And here I do a stop, which is very important. I think that I've solved a very, very confusing question. Remember one thing. Herod became a real king in 37 BC. The ruler in his days was Mark Antony. Everybody knows Mark Antony because of Antony and Cleopatra. Everybody knows the story. Now, what happens next? In the year 31 BC, there was the famous Battle of Actium. In the Battle of Actium, it was the most crucial war between Mark Antony and Augustus. And Augustus won the war. It is not on our mind that Herod, who will build the Antonia, in the days of Mark Antony, in the days of Augustus, will call it after Mark Antony. Impossible. So what happens? One of our greatest scholars, my best friend, Professor Ehud Netzer, who was founder of the field of Herodian architecture, he became famous all over the world with that. He said, since the name of the fortress is Antonia, and since it is connected, the Antonia Fortress, the shape of it is well known to us, and it is connected with the construction of the Temple Mount, so it must be a very, very one of the first works of Herod, because it had to be built before 31, because after 31 he will not call it after Antony when Augustus is already the ruler. You understand the idea? I say I've got another solution which still keeps the order, the chronological order as it was. And this is to explain. It is as follows. When the fortress of Baris existed here, Before Herod started to build the Temple Mount, it was such an impressive building. When I see the breadth of the walls, when I see the cisterns, I can understand it. It was really a magnificent structure. Because all the sources, such as the ones which I mentioned yesterday, the letter of Aristeas, the book of Sirach, of Sirach, and although they speak about this glorious, glorious fortress. And now look at that. Herod the Great, who was a great diplomat and knew very well how to flatter to the Roman emperor, the Roman ruler, changed the name of the Baris into Antonia. How do I know? Because whenever he speaks about the Antonia, always, you can open the book of Josephus Flavius, and you'll see whenever he mentions the Antonia, he said the Antonia which was once named Baris. It is clear that Baris and Antonia is the same, all the time. Now what happens then? When Herod the Great starts to build the temple, and he cuts the rock here, and he cuts the rock here, and actually today, as I said, when you go to this northern end corner of the Temple Mount, you can see all his rock here and all his rock here. That's what it is. What did he do? When he built the Antonia Fortress here, which is based on natural bedrock, but also on scarps, when the rock is cut straight, here it is cut because of the Temple Mount, and here happens something else. The hill goes further north. So what did Herod do? He excavated here a very deep moat, very deep foss, in order to protect it. You know, all those who have been to Jerusalem know the foss, because the Via Dolorosa of today goes inside this canal. You understand? Everybody, the first station, second station, and approaching the third station is all inside this canal today. Rock south and rock north. Not always you can see it. So what happens? Actually, when he built this fortress, remember, this is, as I said, this is the Baris. So look what happens. He did not change the name. This was still a part of the Antonia when the Antonia was still the big one. He did not change it. And therefore, this could be easily understood even by Augustus, that actually this is the fortress which was named Antonia and a part of which is there. And so actually, what we have here is a very interesting thing. So first of all, we are not actually bound by the reason of the name to decide when Antonia was built. It could be built also under Augustus, because it occupies a small part of the Antonia fortress, and so actually this is what we have. I don't know what this one is, but let's say okay. I don't know what it is. Lack of battery.
Give us a second.
It is written in Polish, so I don't know what it is. So what shall we do? You see, a genius is coming, so every problem is solved. At any rate, you see, so I hope you understand. So look what we have here. We have here as follows. First of all, the Baris, construction of the Temple Mount, Herod. You see, Baris is green, all of Herod is red, and the natural bedrock is brown. And you see, a part of the Baris is Antonia, and this is how he's left. Herod digs here a channel, he digs here the Temple Mount, and the rock of Antonia is still there. To this very day, when pilgrims come to Jerusalem, and they walk in the Via Dolorosa, when they walk on the Via Dolorosa in order to see the first station, which is on the Antonia Fortress, they have to climb steps to come here. From here it is impossible because it is too deep. You see, so that is what we have there. Now, going again to the story, I want to show you one thing. You can see here the Antonia Fortress, or the rock cut by Herod the Great, and the continuation of our tunnel. Between the Antonia and here is the fosse, the very deep valley, which fills in not only this pool, which is called in Arabic the Pool of Israel, but further north, the two pools of Bethesda, really very, very important thing to do. At any rate, by this I've solved the problem, and so we have got the northern part of the wall. It cannot be further north because of the fosse and the valley, and of course the fortress of Baris, the walls of which I found in this place. Now, this is only a few things to show you. First of all, this is the scarp, the northern. I'll go back. What I shown you will show you now is this wall here of the Temple Mount, and you can see immediately that it is a very, very steep scarp. All is rock, and above it is another Mamluk building. And this is the northwestern corner of the Temple Mount, about which I was talking so much. You can see here natural bedrock. You see going up, and actually it comes down. All this is natural bedrock coming down. This is the north corner of the picture. The picture doesn't look so nice because it is a very, very old picture. I choose especially, this picture was taken in the 20s of the 20th century, and it is beautiful. You know what? Just one word, because when I see it, I think it is important to mention. You see this little structure here, which is called the Dome of Solomon. It is, you see everywhere natural bedrock. Why natural bedrock? Because it was cut by the rock from Herod. Now I want to tell you something very interesting. When a pilgrim comes to Jerusalem today, one of the things he goes to see is the Via Dolorosa. The Via Dolorosa was started by the Crusaders. 2 times a year, on Palm Sunday, and in the day of the Exaltation of the Cross, which is 14th of September, the Christians used to come under the Crusaders to enter the Temple Mount by the Golden Gate, which is in the east, walk in this area where you see in this picture, that's why I stopped this picture, and went out through gates. You remember I told you that before the Mamluks constructed all the structures in order to combine the city, there were 2 gates only. The gate which was here, where the level of the city and the level of the Temple Mount coincide, there was a gate which was called in French Le Porte Dolorose, because the language spoken by the Crusaders was French, the Gates of Dolorosa, and that's how they used to go, and it goes directly to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. When the Muslims conquered Jerusalem, they forbade the Christians to go to the Temple Mount. What did the Franciscans do in the 14th century? They simply moved the Via Dolorosa to the north. And this is the actual Via Dolorosa. Why do I mention it here? Because here you can see one of the domes which were constructed by the Crusaders as if making a Via Dolorosa which begins already on the Temple Mount. It is very interesting. People don't know about it and they don't understand where the concept of Via Dolorosa started. So now you know that the concept started by the Crusaders and actually maintained by the Franciscans to this very day. Now, as we go on, to remind you again that the Temple Mount is built of only in the east, is built of various periods, where all the rest of the Temple Mount is Herodian altogether. You can see it here. And finally, all the stories which I told you yesterday, I told you that I'll repeat today, just to remind you, very important, the steps, which are ancient steps of the south. Now you know on the north, and so you have got, thanks to the works on the western wall, where we found the gate by which Jews prayed. When we found the northern end, so we have got a real great knowledge of Jerusalem as it was. And the last picture which I want to show you is a very famous one, the inscription which forbids the Gentiles from trespassing into the Temple Mount. And this one is in Istanbul. You see the inscription is written even in Turkish. I took it in the picture in Istanbul, but it shows you how much of the reality of the Temple Mount we know today. It is so important to mention, especially that, as I mentioned yesterday, I did not fail to mention, I'll mention today, that all the international bodies deny the connection between us and the Temple Mount. So thank you very much.